talk New York sports on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
I'm about to run to keep from high. And I'm bound to keep on riding. I got one more silver dollar, but I'm not gonna let them catch me, no. Not gonna let them catch the midnight rider.
Chris,
yeah! Oh, that felt good.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM, the Fan, WFAN.
Yeah! 12:02 on the Fan. McMonagle here with you. I got you for 5 hours, taking you all the way to the warm-up show at 5 a.m. We got Rami on the other side. Me and you taking your phone calls at 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. We got a lot to do, but obviously we start with what everybody figured we'd be talking about this morning. Haktua Girl. Let me just start there. Let me start there for a second because I want to get to the freaking game. Because you know what? The game matters. The game matters. As all the talk about whether or not the Yankees had their worst loss of the year seems to come up a lot. No doubt yesterday was the worst loss of the year for the New York Mets. The worst loss of the year. You cannot come back from a end of a road trip being swept by the Seattle Mariners, being inept offensively, which I told you is the part of this team that has to carry them. You cannot come back and lose 2 out of 3 to the Oakland A's. I don't care that they're better than, you know, perception is of the Oakland A's. I don't care that they're better than the White Sox or they're better than the Florida Miami Marlins who you're about to play next. Like, I understand they played relatively well. They're the A's. Their best hitter was that off having a baby. Congratulations to the Rooker family. And you had a 5-run lead. That's the worst loss. And we're talking about who threw out the first pitch. And I understand why. And it's the Mets' own fault. I understand why Sal's screaming about it. I understand where I'm driving in, listening to all the calls about it. I understand. Here's the thing with the Mets. Plain and simple. And I said it while they were going through the Grimace stuff. If you are going to embrace Grimace the way you did, and you are going to embrace OMG and the live concerts they're going to provide after winning a game against the Houston Astros, if you are going to embrace all of that, then you have to live with the idea of every little thing, like a global YouTube or, you know, social media sensation, however they build her, as throwing out the first pitch. Now you have to live with this. And we talk a lot about LOL Mets and LOL Jets specifically. It used to be the Knicks as well, but we kind of, thankfully, Leon Rose has kind of pulled them out of that. But it's just so dumb. And I don't know why. I don't know why everything has legs with the Mets. It is amazing. I don't know why. I don't know why they embrace Grimace. I don't know why they embrace OMG to this level. Having concerts. I don't know why. So many Met fans are still talking about, you know, everything's about Juan Soto. Like, I don't know why we so often talk about so much more. The season started talking about the future, and now we're talking about who threw out the first pitch and whether or not Juan Soto's going to be here next year as the team is failing and falling apart as they were one win away. It was, what was it, 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago? They were a win away from Atlanta from being the first wild card. And now you can forget the first wild card. You can forget the second wild card. They are 2 games behind Atlanta, who finally lost to San Francisco yesterday. They are 2 games behind Atlanta for the final wild card. And that's it. That's life. That's the only spot left. And who cares about who threw out the first pitch or if it was camp day or how do you explain? Like, how do you explain it? I'm sorry, I know she gave an interview and, you know, we all know what she referenced and talked about. Great, I get it. It was hilarious. We all got into it. I mean, I've seen bumper stickers with Haktua 2024 all over the place. We see T-shirts. It's the first pitch. How do you explain it to your kids? I don't know. I don't know who this woman is. Sorry. I don't know. It's that easy. Like, why? I don't understand. But it's the Mets. It's the same thing, the same argument I've been making about the Jets, too. Like, the Atlanta Falcons just did the exact same thing the Jets did, took on a trade without giving him a contract, an unhappy player who wants a contract. They trade for him, third-round pick, the whole bit. Don't give him a contract. Now, we'll see how it plays out. But no, they just saw the Jets go through it. They did the same thing. No one's killing Atlanta for it, but the Jets are dopes. Now, we'll see if Judon holds out, and that's another conversation we'll get to. But until you win, this is what we talk about. And when you follow it up, and yes, of course, they ended up blowing the game. I get it. And I don't want to make the jokes. It's low-hanging fruit, and I'd be the 150th guy to the party, so I'm not going to do it. But if you are literally going to blow a 5-run lead on Haktua Girl Day, that's your own fault. And I care much more about blowing the lead than I do who threw out the first pitch. We'll talk about it. You want to call me and talk how it's embarrassing, it's this. A lot of embarrassing lately. The Yankees are embarrassing. Oh, my God, how do you lose to them? I'm embarrassed. Oh, it's embarrassing again for the Mets. You know what's embarrassing for the Mets? This offense. You know what's embarrassing for the Mets? They can't throw a strike. 11 walks to the A's. If you're not challenging the A's, then what are you doing? That's what I'm focused on. That's what I'm pissed off about if I'm a Met fan. Who cares about this ancillary nonsense? Who cares? I don't understand it so much with the Mets, even going back to 2000 with who let the dogs out. Like, it's just, it seems to get such legs with this team, and I don't know why. Now, you throw it hot to a girl and you blow a 5-run lead, it makes it easy. I get it. But I'm more focused on that part of it. This team had a 5-0 lead. Vientos, who finally they made the move and put him in the 2-hole. I remember when they did it with Taylor and Taylor won the game. Great. Vientos should be in the 2-hole. Opposite field power makes you think of, we just saw Juan Soto do it. That's a special type of hitter who has easy opposite field power. And you take out a jump out to a 5-run lead and your starting pitcher, who is supposed to be your guy, right? Who's supposed to be the guy who is going to sort of fill in for the ace role that really I don't even know if Senga could fill in. But while Senga was gone, Quintana was going to be the guy who stepped in and stabilized the rotation, was good for them last year when he came back from injury, has had a, you know, I guess Severino, you could argue, maybe not over the last 5 years because of injuries, but you could argue Severino's had as impressive a career or has had his moments, much like Quintana. But like, Quintana's the guy, when you look back at how he pitched for St. Louis, you look back to the 1 year he was spectacular with Chicago. Like, this was the guy who was supposed to step in and stabilize the team. He's had an up-and-down year, to say the least. He went on a little bit of a run somewhat recently, and he can't throw strikes in this game. And he's walking guys towards the end of this lineup on 5 pitches. What is he doing? And then he gives up the grand slam, and immediately it feels like, here we go. That feeling again. The Mets are so much about the other stuff, and the Mets are so much about feel. To be fair, the Yankees are too, but like when they're going good, when this lineup was going good, like this is the difference in the Mets right now and the Mets at the beginning of the season compared to the Mets a month ago. When this lineup, top to bottom, was performing the way it was, you give up a grand slam and make it 5-4, it's okay. We'll come back. That wasn't the feeling yesterday. The feeling yesterday was that grand slam was, they better figure it out. And then they even come back and get another run, but you still don't feel good about it. And this bullpen has been, you know, what it's been. Reed Garrett has the bloom is completely off the rose of what was one of the better talking points and stories of the season at the beginning of the year. And then you get to the manager who, in my estimation, has done a really nice job, right? I think Mendoza has really done a nice job with this team. Got off to that miserable start. Things were falling apart around him. And he stabilized this team. He got it going in the right direction. He was able to, at the beginning part of the year, do a really nice job with the bullpen. I thought he's held his team accountable. I felt like the Lopez throwing the glove into the stands and immediately saying, hey, you don't want to be here, bye, even while the bullpen was kind of falling apart at that time, and you can, you know, always use an arm. And they just made sure, hey, you know what? You can't pitch in the rotation, you're in the bullpen. You can't hit, you're at the bottom of the lineup. You don't want to be here, see ya. And from that meeting, from that moment, from the walk-off home run from J.D. Martinez against Miami, the team took off. And I think he's done a really nice job. But he did a couple of things in this series in particular that I just don't understand. And let me just start with the first one. Because why Buddha pitched in the first game, I brought it up a little bit when he pitched on Tuesday night. Now, I know that you want to keep him somewhat regular. Like when he did it, they actually did this. There's a Metamucil joke in there. But when they did this a couple weeks ago, and they throw him in a blowout game, and it was kind of like, well, we don't know if he's going to get back into the rotation. You know, we got to, you know, you got to keep him. Like, forget all that. Right? I understand the rotation still has its issues, and we saw it in this game. Buddha is without question. Besides, I mean, even better than Diaz, but Diaz is your closer. He still deserves to be. He hasn't been terrible. He's your best weapon in this bullpen. He's your best weapon. And I understand you went through a stretch day where you didn't win a freaking game and you want to use him. You cannot bring in Buddha in a game where they are down 7-1 to the A's. You cannot bring him in that game. I mean, he ends up giving up 2 runs. He held it for a while. The game did get kind of close. I'm not saying you give up, but he's your best weapon. He's a guy who can come in, get you out of a jam. He's a guy who can come in and give you innings, and you're using him multiple innings when you know this is the problem with having your best weapon be this kind of guy, as much as it's a weapon. And the Yankees saw the same thing with King. As much as it's a weapon, when you don't have him regularly and you can't use him and use him the next day, you have to be so careful about where you pick and choose to use this weapon. And it feels almost as it's worse. Like, you know, you go through, you know, the Yankees brought in Weaver the other day against Texas. You lose that game, you're like, man, they just blew Weaver, and now the bullpen's in disarray. You know, that sucks. Like, yeah, when you have a pitcher who pitches and then needs 2 days off, you have to be pinpoint about when you use this guy. And down 7-1 in the first game of the series makes zero sense. This is a game where Buddha would have been brought in and helped you carry you through all the inning. You need to get 15 outs. You barely got through 6. Before the lead was gone. 11 walks. Why is Buddha in a game that doesn't matter? Throw him in a bullpen. Figure out a way to get him some work if you're worried about stretching him for a couple days without throwing. I don't care what you have to do. These games are too important. The Mets have zero netting. They have zero room for error. They are 2 games behind. There is 1 spot available. That's it. They are battling the Atlanta Braves, who have proven over the last handful of years, this team, whether they lose Acuña or not, this team is going to play better down the stretch of the season than it has all year. You know it. Right? They just took 3 or 4 from San Francisco. The offense eventually will awaken here. They have too many good hitters to continue to be like this. You are battling a team that has won the division almost every year I've been alive. Let alone this group the last handful of years. That's who you're battling with. And that's the difference between where you were a couple weeks ago. It's no longer with obviously San Diego and Arizona doing what they've done. It is no longer okay to just be pretty good. I heard Evan saying this the other day. He's 100% right. 2 weeks ago when this team was playing well and you figured, okay, it might not last and you're at the trade deadline, you're not sure how much you want to impact this team, what you're willing to bring, how much more do you need. And I'll be fair, I don't think they have to win the World Series this year. I think that from where they were at one point, they have to make the postseason. And there was a long stretch where being, hey, you know, an average team slightly above 500 with a dominant offense probably gets you into the postseason. Not anymore. Not with the 2 hottest teams in all of baseball running and hiding with the top 2 wild cards. It's no longer 82 wins and sneak into that wild card position. That's not the situation the Mets find themselves in. They have to be a hell of a lot better. They can't lose this series. Why in the world are you wasting your best bullpen weapon in a blowout loss when you don't have him for multiple days? It makes zero sense. Zero. He was much needed in this game. And then you get to the pinch hitting situation in the 7th inning. So obviously Jeff McNeil's coming up with 2 runners on, 1 out. And Jeff McNeil, throughout his career, now look, I know I'm the guy to be talking about Jeff McNeil and how good he is and you can't pitch hit for him when I was going on this whole thing about how I'd rather have Gleyber Torres. I get it. We've seen what's happened here over the last month with Jeff McNeil, right? We've watched it with our eyes. He had good at-bats in this game. He got a hit in this game. Throughout his career, he has not been a guy neutralized by lefties. That's just not who he is. This is a batting title champion in the middle of a good stretch. Now, I agree, the last year and a half, he's been brutally bad. And he pretty much, for a long time, lost his job to Iglesias. I'm not saying he's a world beater, but this is not a guy who needs to come out with a lefty. And you've got I understand, hopefully, the next future of face of your franchise, but Alvarez has been struggling. And it's short-sighted because you know what? It's not even in the seventh inning when he doesn't come through and he hits the little ground ball in front and he runs into it and he's called out. It's the last at bat. It's the last at bat of the game. When against Miller in that fastball, you could have someone who's as good with the bat as anybody putting the ball in play, you know, pulling a Jeff McNeil bloop hit, something. Instead, you got Alvarez in there. Now, he hit the ball hard, but I don't like that matchup at all. You've got to be thinking ahead there. It's not only if it was like, I understand you want to take the lead right there in the seventh inning. You're trying to make it happen right there. But Alvarez isn't enough of an upgrade over Jeff McNeil to make that move right then and there and jeopardize the idea of later in the game when the right, you know, who's waiting in the bullpen. I thought that was a terrible pinch hit, not only for the seventh inning, but what ends up happening in the ninth. So I think Mendoza's done a great job this year, by all means, done a great job. And these things are always difficult. I get it. The lefty, righty, you trust Alvarez. He's come through in big moments. He's had his fair share of big hits and rose to the occasion. And maybe you're trying to challenge your young catcher to get him out of it. I understand. I'm not going to absolutely kill him for it, but these games are too important to lose, and I didn't understand the move. And I certainly don't understand wasting your best reliever. We've seen it throughout baseball. Aaron Boone, whomever. Like, we can kill Aaron Boone. I get it. And other managers who do wacky stuff. But, you know, so many times 7-1 games become 10-1 games and 11-1 games. And we get embarrassed. Same thing happened against the White Sox in the 12-2 loss on Monday night for the Yankees. It's like, oh, embarrassing. Oh, you know why it was embarrassing? Because he threw the slop out there because I'm not throwing my best relievers to maintain a 6-run deficit. And especially with a guy like Buto who can't pitch for 2 days. And we've seen that with King here. We've seen that with the other reliever is now the starter for the Kansas City Royals. I'm losing my mind. I'll think of it. Seth Lugo, thank you. When Lugo is here, he was the type of pitcher who they would give some length and then wouldn't be able to pitch for a couple days. Like, when you have that kind of, when that is your best reliever, it's a gift and a curse. His ability to come in and do what he can do is immensely valuable. But at the same time, he can't pitch for 2 days. He's too important. Throw in somebody else. You want to keep the game close? Throw in somebody else at the back end of that bullpen who's relatively usable again. He is too important a weapon. And all of that is still not even talking about the offense, which, again, we could talk about the bullpen, and I thought the Buto moves were bad, and we got to the manager, fine. But this team, yet again, it's going to be led by its offense. We saw it again with the starting rotation in Quintana. We saw it with the bullpen. This team is not good enough to pitch you to the playoffs. They're not. The answers aren't out there. The rotation's fine for the most part. It's not going to kill you. It might have today, but it's not going to kill you. But it will not get you there. What's going to get you there is this offense. And yes, they jumped out the 5-run lead. Yes, they scored 6 runs in this game. They did nothing after the fourth inning. Nothing. Against the A's. This offense has got to be better. They have got to be better than 2-for-11 with runners in scoring position. They have been brutally bad since the All-Star break at it. Brutally bad. So we could talk about Hock Tua, and we can talk about all the different things. The fact of the matter is the New York Mets right now are in a position where you look at it, you're going up against the Atlanta Braves, who have beat you to the finish line year after year after year after year. They're two games in front of you right now for one spot. One spot. You got swept and completely shut down in Seattle. You come home, and now you lose the first two of three against the Oakland A's. And you're about to play a Miami team that has ended your seasons. A Miami team who has played everybody else in baseball and in that division terribly except the New York Mets. A Miami team that rises to the occasion against this Met team every single time. A Miami team that haunts the Mets' dreams. The Mets have got to win this series bare minimum. And if they take all three, then you feel like, okay, they're 4-2 against these bad teams. You can live with it. But heading into that Baltimore series, this team has got to figure out a way. They have to win the series. I mean, just have to. And you're looking for a sweep. But this has been a team that has bit the Mets in the ass countless times. Frustrating loss for the New York Mets. We can get to all the, you know, BS stuff around it and the LOL Mets and get mad about who threw out the first pitch and how it carries, stays with the team. Fine, we can talk about it, and I understand it. And here's the fact of the matter is, you know what? Don't, when you get silly and you want to embrace, and I was saying it at the time, how about embracing this offense and the team instead of Grimace? Instead of dressing up like Grimace? Instead of asking Pete Alonso and Nimmo the first question off the field after a great win, oh, you know, you haven't lost since Grimace. You want to wrap yourself in it? You want to wrap yourself in the Grimace? Then get ready to fall to your knees against Octua. There you go. I did it. I had to do one. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. So, yes, the struggles of this offense, the struggles of the bullpen, the inability to, you know, to have your best weapon throw multiple days, and the pinpoint accuracy of when you use them is so important, and I felt like it was mismanaged in this series. The starting rotation, the inability to throw strikes, all of it led to the worst loss of the season, blowing a 5-run lead to the Rookerless, their best hitter by far, Oakland A's, and now stepping into a series against the team that has ended how many seasons? How many buildings? It's a huge series for the Mets. Huge. Huge. 888-808-1019. We'll get into the Yankees as well. We'll continue the baseball stories. We take you the next 4.5 hours all the way to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. We'll do a little bit of football as well. I got to address what happened on the morning show this morning and give you my take on the entire situation as my, I don't know, my mental capacity, my honor and dignity were all tested this morning. So we'll have to answer that question. And we'll have a little fun, as sometimes we do with these five-hour shows. We weave a kind of movie theme. And whenever there's like a, especially if there's like a movie thing out in the news or I read a story about it, I usually bring it in here. So we'll have a little fun. We'll get to a little bit of a topic and have a little movie theme throughout the show. So a lot of fun, a lot of yelling, a lot of sucking. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Come back. Continue to take your phone calls all the way to 5 right here on The Fan.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Far back to pass. Takes a deep drop. Steps up. Looking to his right. And the pass intercepted by the Giants at the 40-yard line. Intercepted by the Giants. Corey Webster got the pick and he's tackled at the Packer 34.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 12:31. McMonagle here with you. And I don't know. Do people really have like a moral issue with Hawk to a girl throwing out the first pitch? I don't know why. Like, I know what it's about. I understand that, but like, she's an internet sensation. Like, I don't know. How did Kim Kardashian become famous? Would anybody have a problem if Kim threw out the first pitch? She might have already. We wouldn't even know. She went to the White House. Like, it's 15 minutes of fame. And, you know, the Mets knew they would get clicks. Now, I don't necessarily have a moral issue with it. And I'm going to get into a couple tweets my man Fliegelman put out today. We'll get to that in a bit. But he kind of put it out there. Like, it's just that, especially when they lean into stuff. And the idea of LOL Mets and all the jokes and all the nonsense. Like, if they win this game 6-0, I don't know if it's a big deal. There were some tweets out prior to it. And, you know, it was camp day. I get that. A lot of kids there. Specifically a kid's day to have this seems stupid. I'm not saying it's not. But I think it's nothing if the Mets win this game. And the fact that they blew a lead, of course, adds to it. And now it just gives everybody who wants to rag on the Mets, everybody who wants to give an LOL Mets moment, it gives them an opportunity. And there's no doubt that if this becomes a stretch, if they lose to the Marlins, if they lose to the Baltimore Orioles over the next two series, and they are 4-5 games behind Atlanta, and this thing fades, it is the Hoctua stretch. That's just what it is. Like, that's what everyone, you know, we're going to call it. That's it. Unfortunately, that's what the Mets have done with this thing. But it's just, I just wish, I would like to think. Now, I know the anti-fun police, right? Tommy says that a lot. Even Evan was saying it too when they were going through the Grimace stuff. I wasn't anti-fun. It was just make it about the team. That's what it should be about. There's certain fun things. I'm not saying you can't. The OMG, I think that's relatively fun and harmless. And actually, you know, the team has gathered around it. It's an actual thing as opposed to Grimace being just a complete made-up thing. You know, I did watch Pete Alonso clap out of rhythm for OMG. They all do get up for the song and love it. And it's built camaraderie. It's actually a thing where Grimace is a made-up story. But you want to have the OMG, fine. But like, stop embracing all the nonsense and embrace the team. Make it about the team. I'm much more I would be more embarrassed about the loss than I would be who's throwing out the first pitch. Like, it's just, who cares? I mean, unless it's someone like this or they throw a pitch, you know, 100 feet outside, like, no one even notices. Just makes no sense to me. But we got to get to the real things that make sense for this team, the offense. And again, for me, Pete Alonso thrust himself right into that conversation. I didn't do it in the open because I want to have a longer, extended conversation on Pete Alonso. And, you know, him coming back from that home run, like both times now, again, not to kill him for one just at bat. He did walk in this game. But he has the game in Colorado and follows it up with the series. And he has the home run in Colorado. He follows it up with doing nothing in Seattle. Then he has the game last night. He follows it up with being in the ninth inning with the game in his hands. And had an opportunity in the seventh as well. But that ninth inning pop-up, I mean, it's unfair. Baseball, you fail seven times out of 10, you're a Hall of Famer. There's the cliche, and it's true. But it just feels like it's just not going to happen for Pete. And I'm starting to think it might not happen for this Met team that I would have, you know, I would have told you they're going to the playoffs. And I still believe in this offense, but they've got to be better. 888-808-1019. Chris in Farmingdale. What's up, Chris?
Hey, C-Mac. What's going on, man?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Pretty good. You know, I'm starting to think Alvarez is just another Beatty. I mean, how many more things does this guy need to have to show that he is what we think he is? And I keep saying it, he's Gary Sanchez 2.0, except for the fact that he can't even
Gary Sanchez hit 36 home runs in a season. Gary Sanchez.
Oh, yeah, but then he fell off and everything.
I know, I get it. I'm just saying, Alvarez hasn't even hit the heights of Gary Sanchez, though, is my point. But, yeah, no, I hear you. I mean, last year, struggled offense. Catcher is a tough position, especially down the stretch of the season. He did have a thumb injury. And the Mets, if you look at their record and you look at the pitching staff, like, he impacts the game. He impacts this team. When he came back, they started winning. Now, you're right, though. Offensively, he's been bad. There's no other way to put it. He's been bad. He looks off balance. He takes bad swings. He did hit the ball hard in the ninth, to give him credit, but there's, yeah. I mean, he's not had the kind of year you'd hoped he'd have. There's no doubt.
He's hit the ball hard, but he's hitting it. He's not hanging out of the stadium. This guy's got 5 home runs.
Yeah, I know.
I don't want to hear about, I'm not saying you're saying it, but, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, because of the injury. You know, he was good, hitting good for a month. What happened? It can't be the injury. And I don't think it's his thumb. And I don't think, okay, he's good at commanding pitches from and getting the right location. But how many balls go past him? You see where he holds his glove? He holds it to where the mitt is opposite to where his chest guard is.
Yeah.
When he's supposed to be cupping it. And kind of like,
yeah, bring, I mean, listen, you know,
bring the ball in. I never played catcher, but I can figure it out by now watching the games.
I get you, but here's the thing. Yeah, but Chris, this is what I tried to, you know, it's funny because you mentioned Gary Sanchez, and now you're bringing up more Gary Sanchez stuff. Like, you see it from your couch, right? Do you think the coaching staff doesn't see it? Or do you think the coaching staff is coaching him this way?
Well, I don't think they should be coached because
but here's the thing. Like, there's a lot of stuff about how his stance and how it makes it more difficult for him to be athletic back there and make him, stop balls and there's more pass balls because of it and everything and wild pitches. It makes it more difficult to stop balls in the dirt with his stance, not only just how he holds the glove, but, you know, both legs down and everything like that. But here's the thing. Everything he does and everything that catchers do in this game is designed right now, until rules change, but right now is designed to steal strikes. They believe stealing the low strike is far more important than any other aspect of catching. They more than pass balls, more than balls in the dirt. If it was a problem, if they viewed it the same way you do, Chris, he would have a different stance. They don't. They view it, he's trying to get low and steal strikes. That's it. Same thing with Gary Sanchez, and we can complain about it, but, like, that's how he's being coached.
Well, it's costing runners to come in from third.
Yeah.
It's costing runners to go to second. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a lot of times when they're on second, they're coming in because, you know, here comes another walk. Here comes another walk after that. Now the bases are loaded.
Right.
And here comes the hit. You know, it just seems like, you know, I think there should be a different approach.
No, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying my point is,
I agree.
I'm not going to get, it's tough to get on him for it when something like this is glaring. I mean, how many times has Darlin, how many times has Ron talked about it? I mean, we've been talking, like, you're not alone, Chris. I mean, his hitting is one thing, agreed. But his defensive acumen, he came up and was far better than anybody thought. He's got a great arm. He throws runners out. Like, he's been, the knock on him was he can't play defense. And I don't think that's what we've seen. But when it comes to pass balls and his inability to block them, they are not helping him. They don't care. I can't get on him when the coaching staff doesn't care. Same thing with Gary Sanchez. I tried to say this over and over again with Yankee fans. They don't want to hear it. I get it. The balls get by. That's it. He had 4 different catching coaches in like 3 years. And each one of them, he had a different stance every year. And it was always designed to steal strikes. They believe pitch framing and strike stealing is the most valuable part of a catcher's game. They don't believe it's stopping the occasional wild pitch, ball in the dirt. They don't. Now, in certain situations, obviously, but you can't coach him to be in and out, like, you know, bottom of the ninth, up a run, 2 outs, runner on third. Clearly, stopping the ball in the dirt should be priority number 1. But over the course of 162, which is not just, you know, which is one, I'm going to say the ugly word now. So I know you all kept your kids' eyes over as they were throwing out the first pitch of the game. Now, everybody, you know, earmuff your children because I'm going to say a bad word. The analytics of it all is that over 162, stealing low strikes far outweighs the benefits of that, far outweigh stopping the occasional ball in the dirt. But when the ball in the dirt happens, it looks like a big deal. It costs you a run moving over, and nobody notices or cares about the stolen strike. You see it, you don't even think twice about it at all. You blame the umpire. Wow, ump blew that one. But we don't recognize the impact the catch is having stealing those strikes. They do. Their analytics tell them. So on that aspect, I'm going to give him a break, because if it were a problem to the Mets, they would change it, or at least attempt to change it and coach it out of him and change it a little bit. They're not. Same thing you mentioned, Gary Sanchez. That's the only reason why I've mentioned him a couple times. The caller brought it up. He's 100% right. Gary Sanchez, we would scream and yell and this and that. Oh, he's bad behind the plate. He lets balls go. They didn't give a damn. Why do you think right now that with Wells, they're still, everyone's worried they're going to put Trevino back in the game? Trevino can't throw anybody out. His arm's a noodle. He's lost it completely. They don't care. They don't care about stolen bases. They don't care about balls in the dirt. They care about one thing. He's an excellent pitch framer. That's it.
It'll be interesting to see them adjust when they come up with the rope.
That's the thing. The catching position, no other position. There's not a rule, and we're going to get to another major league rule that they actually brought up on the Met broadcast that I saw John Boy talking about earlier in the game. Earlier in the day. I cannot fathom people are this stupid to even suggest some of the rules I'm hearing. But whatever. Sometimes the teams have to adapt. Doesn't matter. We'll get into it later. It just drives me absolutely bonkers, these radical rules. But no other position. You want to talk about the shifting, this and that, rules that could change. Like, the defensive catcher position is going to change dramatically the second they go to robo-umpiring. Dramatically. The minute it is no longer valuable to try and trick an umpire, it's going to be dramatically different, and we won't see these stances that you see now. We won't see them trying to get this low. We won't see them holding the glove the way they're holding them, because it won't matter. I mean, maybe it will on some level if they still have the... I mean, if it's going to be strictly ump, strictly robo, where if it crosses the zone, the umpire gets a vibration in his pocket, then he calls a strike, then it won't matter at all. If they go to some sort of rule where they're going to have that great technology to replay it instantly, then it might, because you're only allowed so many replays. You want to get I don't know. We're getting too down the woods of this thing. But the catching position is all they care about is stealing strikes. But Alvarez is a problem. There's no doubt about it. Offensively, he's a problem. If you would have told us 2 months ago that I would be screaming in the open about pinch hitting Alvarez for Jeff McNeil, you would have thought I was crazy. You would have thought I was crazy. But here we are. Here we are. You cannot pinch hit Alvarez. I remember just at the Yankee game, I was in the press box, the Yankee-Met game, and they didn't pinch hit Alvarez for Torrens. And a bunch of guys around me were like, really? I'm not going to pinch hit Alvarez in this spot. It was like in the eighth inning tie game or one up one run, runners on. I forget the exact situation, but it was Torrens was starting. I was like, really? Not going to pinch Alvarez? Not going to pinch hit Alvarez? Not going to pinch hit Alvarez? Now... hell no. Why would you? He's been brutal. Bob in Connecticut. What's up, Bob?
Hey, T-Mac, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on? How are you?
Not too much. Your opening monologue, it was actually sort of transitions well into what I was going to, my comment. And that's
okay.
Well, I think it's going to be incredibly difficult for any of these teams because, take a look at the leaders of all the divisions. I mean, 72 wins is the lead, is the MLB like best record, which is the Yankees, Baltimore Orioles, the Indians, and I think there's another team in there.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Looking at the standings, so what my point is. With the chaos that's ensued this year with the weather, it's impossible. It's going to be almost impossible to get to 100 wins for the best team.
Right.
So what I'm trying to say is a team like the Mets, if they're not on their A game at all times, they're not going to be able to catch up. Not this summer because of the weather. I'm telling you, it's impacted.
You think
baseball.
It's the weather?
I think the weather has had a tremendous...
What about the weather?
I think it's been a brutal summer, and I think it's been, an Indian summer, and it's been...
an Indian summer is typically late September and October that is still hot. I believe that's the term.
You're right. I guess my point is, and I'm sorry.
No, I guess no. I'm just trying to make sure I got... I didn't mean to crutch. I didn't mean to be a jerk there, but because I understand your point. It's been a hot summer, I suppose. Here, certainly, I don't know if it's been all around the country. Yeah. I haven't paid attention.
It feels like it's been a really tough summer, and winds have been tough to come by. And the 110, 115 team is not going to happen this year.
No, I mean, you're right. There's a chance that you don't see a 100-win team right now. I don't think there is a team on pace for 100 wins. So, yes, the best record in all of baseball right now is the Cleveland Guardians at 72-49, a half game better than the Yankees and the Orioles. And those are the three best teams in baseball right now, record-wise. But, I mean, as far as the Mets go, though, here's the point. We can talk about the weather. It's going to cool off, I guess, eventually. I don't know. But that's not the point. The point is, 3 weeks ago, the Arizona Diamondbacks and the San Diego Padres weren't this force. They are both 9-1 over their last 10 games. They are 9-1. The Mets are 4-6. They've overtaken the Mets by 5 games in the last 10. They are 69-53. They are in it in the divisional race. They're 2 games behind the Dodgers. Like they were floundering. They were right there. They were behind. The Mets swept the Padres when they played them. The Diamondbacks were struggling. Corbin Carroll was having a miserable sophomore season. They were not the team they were last year. At the end of the year, they got into the World Series. Now they are. And the Mets, who once felt, or at least we felt, the perception was that, hey, just be what you thought you could be, which is a above-average baseball team. A slightly above-average baseball team. Go out there and win 84, 85 games, and you will sneak in to the back end of the wild card race. And now you've had 2 teams just set up shop in first and second place of the wild card, and it's over. It's over. They are not catching Arizona and San Diego. They are 6.5 games back of Arizona and San Diego. Forget about it. Forget about it. The Mets are 1.5 games up on San Francisco and 2 games up on Cincinnati and St. Louis. So, I mean, you want to include those 2 teams? Let's just make it within 4 games. The Cubs are 5.5, so let's just keep it 4. You are talking about Atlanta, Mets, San Francisco, Cincinnati. Those 4 teams playing for 1 spot. That's it. That has now become the National League pennant race. That's it. I mean, Philadelphia is still 7 games up on Atlanta. Milwaukee is 9 games up on Cincinnati. And the Dodgers are 2 games up on Arizona and San Diego. But say they catch L.A., then L.A. is in the wild card. Like, that's those 3 National League West teams are going to the playoffs. There is only 1 thing left. The divisions are locked up. Philadelphia up, 7 games. They're going to win the division. Milwaukee's up 9 games. They're going to win the division. And then those 3 teams are coming out of the West. All that is left to be decided here on August 15th in the National League playoff is which one of these 4 teams is going to be the final wild card. Will it be the Atlanta Braves? Will it be the Mets? Or will it be the Giants or Reds? That's it. There's 1 question left. And you would have figured that this would have been a crazy, mashed up wild card. The whole year felt like that. The whole year felt like that. And it was what? I mean, 2 weeks ago? Let's go back to the exact date. That third game. Today is the August 16th. It was July 27th, or July 28th, let's say. So 2.5 weeks ago. 2.5 weeks ago, the Mets had taken the first 2 games. Oh, no, the 27th. It doesn't matter. Still 2.5 weeks. The Mets had taken the first 2 games of a 4-game set at Citi Field against the Braves, coming off sweeping the Yankees. They were on a 5-game winning streak, and they were a win away from taking over first place wild card from the Atlanta Braves. That's where they were on July 27th. Just about a day shy of 3 weeks later. So it's more than 2.5 weeks. A day shy of 3 weeks later, they're 2 games out of the wild card. And they're six games behind that first place wild card. They were right there to lead the wild card. It's been 3 weeks. They're six games back. They have fallen back two games a week. This, I mean, it's down to beating out the Braves for the last wild card spot. They have no room for error. Being just a good, solid team in the National League is not enough right now. Now you're battling with, an Atlanta team that was struggling, is struggling, managed to win a series against San Francisco. And I'm sorry, they have a track record of winning this. They have a track record of being a playoff team. They have guys in that room who've done this before. This is going to be a difficult task, especially if you're going to lose two out of three to Oakland A's. Especially if you're not going to throw strikes. Especially if your offense is going to go 2-for-11 and 4-for-16 and every night be miserable with runners in scoring position. You're not going to do it. So, I mean, this next series against Miami is enormous. And this is a huge start for Manaea. Tonight, 7:10. Saturday, 4:10. Severino. Sunday, 12:05 p.m. Blackburn. They got to win these three games. Plain and simple. Forget everything else. They got to start winning now. And then you're going to get to the tougher part of the schedule. Like, you got seven straight games against San Diego and Arizona on the West Coast. Now, traditionally, if memory serves me right, the Mets have played very well in Arizona. But this team feels like they're on a mission. Those both of those teams are, bar none, the two hottest teams in baseball. So you have three games against Miami. Listen to this stretch for the New York Mets. You have three games against Miami, who I agree are awful, but play the Mets extremely tough and have broken the Mets' hearts more times than I can count. You have three games at home against Miami, and then you proceed to play the Baltimore Orioles, who have been average for 2 months, fair, but the best record in Major League Baseball, you know, half a game behind the best record in Major League Baseball, and then you go out to the West Coast and play four against San Diego and three against Arizona, two, bar none, the two hottest teams in baseball. So you have three games against the lousy Marlins that you better freaking win, because then you embark on a 10-game stretch of playing either the best records in the game or the hottest teams in the game. Most of it on the road on the West Coast. Buckle up, because this is where the season will be won or lost. We will know. And they swept them in Arizona last year. In my mind, for whatever reason, I remember Mets play well in Arizona. So I'm not saying it's impossible. I still have faith in this Met offense. But they're going to have to wake up, because I don't trust the pitching, bullpen, or starting rotation. Not to be dominant. I mean, right now, the best starting pitcher is David Peterson. But that's the stretch for the New York Mets right now. They better win. You know, I said two of three. The more I look at it, you need to win all three of these games, because then you face a first-place team and the two hottest teams in baseball for a 10-game stretch, and the last seven of which will be on the road in the West Coast. Now, you get the White Sox after that, and let me just tell you something from being a fan whose team just played three games against the White Sox. It sucks. It's miserable. It's absolutely miserable, because you can't lose. Hell, you can't be losing in the game. You can't fall behind. You can't have a 3-2 count. Like, you're supposed to just, from the first pitch, just dominate. It sucks. There's no fun in it. Now, you expect to win those games, but I feel like the White Sox might, I mean, their manager's walking Soto to pitch the Judge. They have nothing to lose. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. 1 hour down. We'll continue to take your Met calls. We'll get into the Yankees. I'll defend myself and my take on who's the best player in the history of baseball, which people still don't understand. You're all idiots. I hate to tell you this. I know that's a bit much, and I love you. You know I do. But you're all dopes. Stop giving me career stat lines. Plain and simple. The best I've ever seen. That's it. The best I've ever seen. We have no problem calling, you know, different players who had Jim Brown's the greatest footballer ever played. He's got 8 seasons under his belt. How the hell is he better than Emmitt Smith? Emmitt Smith played for 35 years. Emmitt Smith's got every record, but Jim, why is Jim Brown better? Sandy Koufax. Nobody ever threw a curveball like Sandy Koufax. He's the best pitcher I've ever seen. Why? He had a short career and wasn't good for the beginning part of it. Why is Sandy Koufax the best pitcher ever? Nolan Ryan was throwing 97 miles an hour when he was 45. He's not better? We're not arguing careers. I'm talking about, as I'm watching, that's the best person to ever play the freaking game. And I'll explain who I'm talking about later. 12:57, McMonagle with you on the Fan. Come back, take your phone calls all the way to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show.
Watch this Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern, live on CBS Television. The Big 3 Championship Weekend tips off from Boston's TD Garden. Watch Gary Payton's Bivouac and Michael Cooper's Three's Company battle it out for the Dr. J Championship Trophy. That's this Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern, live on CBS Television. Ice Cube's Big 3 Basketball Championship Game from Boston's TD Garden. Watch all the action live this Sunday at 3 p.m. on CBS Television and on X Around the World. Big 3 Basketball, a sports extravaganza like no other.
Are you looking for the perfect summer getaway? Look no further than Nassau County, Long Island. With miles of beautiful beaches, historic landmarks,